2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 10 Show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert in the tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football. The Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Good to be here, Mr. Bill.
What's going on, Bill? How you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. We got a lot to talk about again this week, and a lot of it's not good, but we're going to give it a go, that's for sure. Our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, fellas, the remaining two teams, undefeated teams, got pushed to the limit this weekend, but both pulled out their games and will certainly remain on the top of the committee's rankings when they're announced here in about 25 minutes. So we'll get to that. We'll see who ends up at number 3 and 4. It looks like Auburn should slide up since they were 4. Ole Miss is going to go away since they lost. So we'll get into all that. But, Keith, I'm not sure where to start with the Penn State game. The O-line, again, struggled mightily. Couldn't depend on Christian Hackenberg, who might have had his worst game of his career. The defense was lights out. Sam Pickett was automatic. But, man, the offensive line sure didn't look too good again on Saturday.
Yeah, it's just disappointing week in and week out right now, watching what's going on there. And, you know, now we go into the game, how it's going to be and what they need to do to get the job done, and it's still not getting done. And it's just frustrating as a fan, as an alumnus, all that stuff. So disappointed, to say the least. Disappointed how the whole pregame situation went down. I mean, I know that looks like Maryland looks bad doing what they did, but you know what? Penn State, we're not, you know, our guys were out there trying to tussle, run to their stretch lines and stuff like that. Just, you know, and then they don't shake your hands. What I'm more frustrated about is them disrespecting us on our football field and then us going out and laying an egg and just taking it, you know? Just not having, you know, if somebody comes in there and spits on me or spits on somebody in my family and disrespects me, you better bring a lunch, pal, because it's going to be a long night ahead of you. And it just seemed like we had none of that, whatsoever.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that was high on my list of things to talk about. And I looked at this thing a little bit of a different way, I guess. First of all, I think Randy Etzel, he's trying to create a rivalry. You know, well, when you haven't won but once in about 40 or 50 years, I don't think there's a rivalry. So he said, and you're not going to tell me he didn't have his kids involved in that. He wasn't involved in that. So they didn't shake hands. They go out and win the game, and then he gets on after the game, and he basically says, we're going to start a rivalry right here. I think it was all planned. But from the other side of the coin, win the game. If you're Penn State, win the game. Don't go out and get beat and play lousy. So for all that gamesmanship or whatever you want to call it, the cure of that is to kick their butt. And Penn State didn't do that.
That's the most disappointing thing. I mean, like I said, just those guys not having enough, intestinal fortitude is what Terry calls it, of course, to go out and do something about it, you know. you're going to try to act tough and play tough and this and that, and then someone does that to you before the coin flip, and then you don't go out and personally have a vendetta against those guys. I mean, you really got to check yourself and what's going on here. I mean, I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about how the team's playing and stuff like that. I'm not happy it even happened, in my opinion. Enough teams have tried to come in here and do that to us and stuff like that. But you know what they got? They got a nice little butt whipping after that, you know. And that was horrible that we did not give that butt whipping to these guys. And walked out of here with their chests out and, you know, disrespecting Penn State. And now it's a rivalry now. You know, whatever. We'll see you next year. But, you know, we had our chance to do it. I mean, we go out and win by 20 points. No one remembers the coin toss. No one remembers a thing about it. Now that we go out and lay the egg, it's all they're going to remember right now.
Yep. Terry, what was your thinking about all that pregame stuff? Any real thoughts on it?
Well, it was interesting to say the least, and I think Keith is right. If Penn State takes care of business there on the field, I don't think we're really talking much about it. But, you don't like to see that kind of activity before the game, both, you know, with both teams getting into it there, and then obviously with the handshake deal, and, you know, they've since been fined and, dealt with accordingly. But, it's unfortunate that kind of stuff happened. I understand from a competitive standpoint that, you know, Maryland is trying to find their way, and they're in the Big Ten now, and, you know, obviously, from a recruiting standpoint, Penn State's done a very good job in the state of Maryland, and they've gone in there and gotten some really good football players. So, you know, from the standpoint of Maryland trying to lay claim to, being a viable competitor there in the Big Ten, I understand, you know, why they were so feisty. But, you know, going about it in that manner is, you know, there's really no room in the game of college, well, any sport, college athletics in general, for that kind of behavior. But, you know what, if someone's going to be like that, you know, to Keith's point, to your point, Bill, I mean, you know, you got to put up a fight, and unfortunately, Penn State didn't really, at least the offense didn't come through, and they didn't have that nasty edge to them. And that's one thing that's been, I think, the most disappointing thing for me as someone that just enjoys college football and someone that, you know, looks at Penn State as one of the blue blood programs in college football. It's just very unfortunate that they just don't seem to have that edge, that nastiness to it. And, you know, a lot of times that comes from the top down, and, Keith could speak to this more so than I could. I mean, From everything that I know of Franklin, he's a pretty fiery dude. He's a pretty in-your-face, abrasive kind of guy. So you would think that their team would kind of take on that kind of persona, but, you know, they haven't done that. Offensively speaking, up front, they just haven't been nasty, and, you know, that's not the kind of Penn State team that I'm familiar with. So, you know, it was sad. I understand what Maryland's trying to do. I don't condone that kind of activity, but I understand the feistiness and, you know, where it comes from. But you know what? If Penn State does what they need to do, it's not an issue. But, I mean, you know, like you said, Bill, the defense only gave up – they gave up less than 200 yards of total offense. I think they gave up, 33 yards rushing.
Yep.
You know, it really came down to the turnovers in this game. And Penn State had four – well, really they had five where they got very fortunate with one of those calls where – the interception return for a touchdown was called back. I mean, that was a pretty tough call for Maryland there. But you mentioned Hackenberg struggling. I mean, he was 18 of, 42 for 177 yards or something along those lines. When you look at the last four games for Penn State, and I looked at this before we came on, he's only completing about 54% of his passes in that four-game losing streak. They're averaging less than 200 yards passing, 194 a game. He has three touchdowns and five interceptions in that four-game stretch. You combine that with the fact that they can't run the football, and they're 124th plus in the country, averaging 40 yards a game rushing, net yards, the last four games in this four-game losing streak. And obviously we've outlined numerous times that the offensive line continues to struggle, and Keith could most certainly talk to the nuances of that more so than I could. But it's I'm the defense at Penn State, I've got to be really frustrated because that defense is playing really, really well. They've played well all year. Just think about this, guys. If that defense doesn't play as well as they have, this team would be lucky to be 2-6. I mean, honestly, they would be lucky to be 2-6 based on the performance of the offense. And Hackenberg, to me, is still one of the premier talents in college football, but he's definitely having a difficult time. I think offensively, they're not putting, you know, some of their key players in position schematically to take advantage of certain opportunities. And one of the things we talked about in the very first show was one of my main points was I wanted to see in-game how this offense kind of progresses throughout the course of the season. And one thing you can say about Bill O'Brien is that he's one of the bright offensive minds in all of football, college, pro, whatever, what have you. He's a bright offensive mind, and he had that team with probably, in some ways, less talent, you know, at certain positions. Obviously the offensive line was better, but, they had some good players. But, right now, you look at the wide receiver core, they got some really good players. They got some guys that can do some things with the ball. They have a tight end, a set of tight ends that can really play. But they're not utilizing their resources very well. In my mind, they're not utilizing their resources very well. And it's got to be very frustrating for Penn State to go through a stretch like this. And when you look at the stats and you look at what's going on, it's just not a good thing. I mean, we knew this wasn't going to be the year, but, it's frustrating to see them not play very well the last 4 weeks.
Well, hey, Keith, that leads me into what I wanted to hit you up with also, is Terry made some really good points. And, I think I sent you a message the other day, but I know you've been under the weather and haven't been doing too much. But, the Penn State fans are hurting themselves, falling off of this bandwagon. Some of them, I think, are diving off. And, they're giving up on this team. They're calling for Christian Hackenberg's head. I saw a bunch of people saying that he ought to be benched. They're after James Franklin. They're after the offensive coordinator. There's a whole lot of blame to go around. And I guess my only real negative comment to any of that is that there was a situation there when they needed a first down really bad on third and six and they ran the football. And I'm thinking, you haven't gained 6 yards in a month. What makes you think that you're gonna gain 6 yards on third down here when you've got to have a first down? And I'm thinking at his worst, which I think maybe Hackenberg was this week, he's better and gives you a better chance than that offensive line does running the football for 6 yards on third down.
Completely agree. 100% agree with you guys. Go back to what you said about what Terry said about Bill O'Brien and how he may have had some better players but not better skilled players. I think O'Brien made good what he had, and I think what we may not be seeing that right now with this new staff. But it's a work in progress. And again, there's 47 guys playing on Saturdays that are on scholarships. We knew this was going to be the toughest year. I knew it. Everybody knew it going in there. The worst thing that could have happened was Penn State going 4-0 to start the season. So they had this false sense of security that in the bowl games, the bowl ban was lifted. And we talked about it in this show, going to Michigan 6-0 or going to Ohio State 6-0, 7-0, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was, but that's what we were talking about a month and a half ago. And, it's just not happening for the guys. It's not happening for the players or the coaches. It's, again, frustrating. And the fans, they're the ones that drive me nuts. They're the most fickle people I've ever met in my life. I can't believe I'm saying that about Penn State fans. Because they're loyal through and through for everything that has gone through here in the last 3 or 4 years. And, and now they feel as if they have this right to say whatever they want. I mean, what I'm most pissed off about, furious about, and upset about is the first week he was Rutgers fans acting. He wanted an apology for that. And then it was, what was the next one? People can play
Michigan,
the referees against Ohio State, they wanted an apology for that. And then this week they wanted an apology for the handshake. It's like, enough of the apologies. We got to change some stuff, obviously, I mean, our fans, they're so fickle anymore. They may feel as if they're slanted against with what's going on around here, and maybe they're a little gun-shy or a little just scared. I don't know what it is, but it's just to be demanding the way they are right now. Of anything more than this team is giving, and Coach Franklin and his staff are giving, is asinine. These kids are good. You think they want to go out there and lay an egg like they have? No. No one wants to do that. We knew this was going to be bad. It's frustrating to no end, and I think it's probably all to do with what happened to start the season. Us going 4-0 and us getting a bowl band lifted and us talking about going, all we want to do is go to a BCS bowl or a big-time bowl or this or that. Yeah. It was just like, hey, man, let's just go to a bowl now. Let's just get to a bowl for these kids.
Right.
Practice it. So.
Do you think we got Indiana at Indiana, Temple at home, at Illinois, and Michigan State at home? They got a chance to win two of their four games and get bowl eligible, Terry?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I don't know if Keith wants to answer that first. I was going to say absolutely. I mean, I think Indiana is a little bit less than what we thought they were going to be going into the year with some injuries, especially at the quarterback position. So I think Penn State can win this week. And you look at Illinois, who, you know, definitely isn't, you know, I don't think that's going to be, you know, a very difficult game. If they play well, if they execute and play well, I think they can win that game. Hey, Temple will be a very interesting game. But, I mean, obviously on paper, Penn State's a much more talented team. So, I mean, those are three games right there that they could win. You know, could they lose a couple of those games? It's very possible. Indiana's possible. Temple might be possible. We'll see how that plays out. You know, Illinois, it's possible, but I mean, I think Penn State goes in as a favorite in all three of those games. So you got to figure that they're likely going to win two out of those three and possibly all three. And Michigan State, I'll just say there's very little chance they're going to win that game. You know, I mean, when you look at it on paper, I mean, it's Michigan State's a really good football team. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, absolutely. I mean, they got a chance to win the next three games, get to a bowl game, and then, you know, maybe, you know, get some momentum heading into to signing day.
Well, Keith, I wanted to ask you too. One of our avid listeners, guy listens every week to our show, and he asked me a question today regarding the offensive line. Excuse me. Said, you know, is there help on the way, and how soon can you straighten this sort of thing out? And you know, I guess my first question was response to that was from, you know, if they had true freshmen that were good enough to be playing, as bad as things have been of late, they would probably be playing already. So to say that help is on the way next year, I think is probably not the right answer. Get a good recruiting class in. Maybe you can get a true freshman that can step in and play. But then they come back maybe the next year as redshirt freshmen, and the guys that they have now are a couple of years older. I would say that offensive line is 2 years away at least. What would you think being an offensive lineman?
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, even Coach Franklin had a meeting last week and said that 2016, he thinks that's when they're going to be able to compete nationally on a national level or for Big Ten titles. As an offensive lineman, you're right. If they have guys there trying to redshirt and they weren't good enough to beat these guys out, you know, next year's going to be pretty bad, too.
yeah, right.
And the recruiting thing, I mean, the whole thing with the offensive line, you can get a pretty good understanding or a pretty good feel for what kind of recruiting class you have for all the positions except for offensive line. It's just so easy to miss on just because guys are so much bigger than they're playing against in high school. They look like man children out there. They're running around there. Athletic, big, strong, they're beating people up, and, you know, then they get around to somebody who's their own size, and they don't know how to play the game correctly. Seems to have happened recently for Penn State. I mean, we have all these five-star recruits who have done anything for us. And it's, you know, I feel upset with the kids. It's not the kids' fault. I mean, the kids playing the game what they're supposed to do and all in high school, and it is tough I believe it's the toughest position to recruit. I know that when I was playing and before I was playing, Penn State historically, their offensive tackles were tight end, defensive end type of players, and their guards and centers were defensive tackle types. They move over, and they move the linebackers down to defensive linemen, and then their safeties to linebacker. I mean, it's just how Penn State has always done it. I'm a huge proponent. I mean, I came to Penn State, I was 275 pounds. And I ran a whatever 40. You know, I was with Jeff Harding, Mark Rivera, Andre Johnson. We were all under 280 pounds. Jeff was 240. You know, for somebody to recruit, for somebody to be 330 pounds in high school, you're fat. You're fat, and you don't play both ways in high school. You're not athletic enough to play offensive defense, or in shape enough to play offensive defense in high school. But you shouldn't be an offensive lineman. You should not be a top Division I recruit, in my opinion. You got to have athleticism, strength, and stamina. And then if you come to Penn State and you're 330 pounds, they got to drop 40 pounds off you and then build you back up. Guess what? You're 2 years behind already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, down in the Sunshine State, everybody platoons. Everybody, 90% of the kids play one way down here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wonder why, because I want to put my best players on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I only played one way in high school, and I only played defense. I mean, we had enough kids with our coach's feelings. I mean, there's a lot of kids playing. Usually it's 30 or 40 kids on the team. The kids are playing both ways.
Right. The smaller schools. Yep.
Hey,
yeah. Well,
hey, Bill.
Go ahead, Terry.
I just wanted to comment on just one thing as it pertains to offensive line recruiting. So, you know, depending on – I'm kind of a recruit nick a little bit, as you know. So one of the – you can look at different sites, obviously, and they evaluate very generally. It's not like they're evaluating based on these kids fitting in, you know, perfectly to a specific scheme and whatnot. But, you know, when they give them their ratings, their 5 stars, their 4 stars, that's a very, you know, general – you know, they fit, certain criteria fits into a bucket and they fall into that, you know, a various slot. But I will say that, you know, Penn State does have 3 kids that committed already that are, you know, really good, you know, really good prospects, including the kid from Pittsburgh, Sterling Jenkins, who was recruited by a number of big programs. Ohio State was thought to be the leader for him for a long time, and, you know, Penn State kind of stole one. A kid from Pittsburgh, about 6'8", 305, so he's not that 330-pounder that Keith is talking about. But, you know, at 6'8", 305, I mean, obviously at that height, you know, when you start talking about leverage, you need to have, you know, really good feet, really good hands. You know, obviously has a very, you know, long arm span there. But, you know, you run into different difficulties when you're that tall. But he's the premier prospect they have on the offensive line coming in. So it'd be great to, you know, if when Keith gets a chance to take a look at this kid, to let us know what he thinks. But, you know, apparently he's a prototypical, you know, left tackle. You know, especially as you talk about somebody with those measurables for the next level. Not that there's very many 6'8 offensive tackles that are, you know, overly successful in the NFL, but we've had a few, Jonathan Ogden and some of those guys. But it'll be interesting to see what, you know, once that kid gets on campus. But, you know, in terms of just on paper, at 6'8", 305, he's definitely the premier offensive tackle prospect that they have coming in. They have a couple of good guard prospects as well, but so is help on the way? Help is on the way by way of prospects, but as you guys pointed out, in terms of them getting on the field and actually producing, and especially being able to segue into a much more physical, you know, game at the point of attack, we'll see. But, you know, they do have a few really good prospects that are already on the books for next season.
Well, you know, that kid might be really, really, really good, but a 6'8", 305 true freshman going against Joey Bosa next year would scare me to death.
Hey, you better be really good, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hopefully the kid plays basketball. If he plays basketball, then he's...
He can be a 6'8", 305 senior, and you're going to have your hands full with a kid like that.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty special.
Yes, he is. Well, let's jump over and talk about the Temple Owls. And, you know, you look at this game and you think, how in the world did this happen? But it comes down to one number. East Carolina had 428 yards of total offense. Temple had 135.
Yep.
70 yards passing, 65 yards rushing. They beat number 23 ranked Pirates 20-10. But the two keys to the game. East Carolina, 12 penalties for 116 yards. They fumbled 5 times and lost every one of them. And that's your ball game, and that is a huge win for Matt Rhule and the Temple Owls.
Big time.
No question. I mean, Temple most certainly capitalized on a few things. One, as you pointed out, the 5 turnovers. And the other thing was they handled the elements, you know, fairly well. They held on to the ball. That was the key. I mean, the weather wasn't so good. You know, it wasn't the most exciting atmosphere as they panned through the stadium. There wasn't a whole lot of support there. So, you know, for East Carolina, you know, sometimes when you go into those situations and you're not up for a game like that, you know, Temple, regardless of the fanfare there, they obviously were ready to play, and they played well. You know, we were kind of texting back and forth and kind of rooting for Temple, and that was exciting to see them, you know, pull off a win. And, you know, now they're one way away from being bowl eligible. And, you know, as we mentioned a little earlier, heck, that game against Penn State's going to be very interesting when they play in a couple weeks. And, you know, they play Memphis this week, and then they have a couple other games. But there's a couple on the schedule that I think they could win. So they need one more win to get bowl eligible. I know we're all rooting for that. But it was a heck of an effort, as you pointed out. Statistically, they didn't really do much against East Carolina. But the one thing they did do was take care of the ball and handle the elements better, and that was enough to win the game.
Yep. Keith, what about your boy Matt Rhule coming up with a big one?
Yeah, man, we talked about program makers and program builders, and that definitely is one right there. be the top 25 team like that, and then, you know, handling them on the scoreboard. But after having a fumble return for touchdowns, big, got them going the right way. You know, good for Temple. I mean, you know me. I told you before. I mean, we root for Matt a lot here. You know, I'm worried about Matt coming up here in 3 weeks and playing up here and playing against us next week or next Saturday against your sister. We're 10 days away. So it's a huge game. They got a big game against Memphis. I mean, is that a trap game? You're damn right it is. I mean, Temple can go in there and lay an egg and just get destroyed by Memphis. You know, coming off a huge win that they had against East Carolina, and then going and having a week of Memphis and then Penn State, their biggest game of their lives. You know, there's definitely a way that, you know, there's a shot that Temple may get beat by 50 points this week. They're overlooking them, Memphis. So, you know, they better be on time and on target this week.
Yeah, interestingly, if they were to play right now, Temple is ranked number 112th in the nation in rushing. And Penn State is ranked number 124th in the nation in Russia. Yeah.
So what you're saying is there'll be an offensive explosion.
Yeah. Well, one thing about it is you know the Penn State defense will come to play in that game, so that's for sure. Well, hey, what about the Villanova Wildcats? They had to go down to play Richmond. We knew the Spiders were going to be tough. Michael Rocco got some Penn State ties along the way playing quarterback. He used to play at the University of Virginia. He's the Spiders quarterback, and Terry, they took the Wildcats down 10-9.
Yeah, absolutely, and you called it. You said it was going to be a tough game, and you actually went back and forth on that one. You ended up going with the hometown team. But Richmond, yeah, really good game. Both offenses really struggled, couldn't really get anything going. Rocco threw for over 300 yards. Obviously, as you pointed out, a former Virginia quarterback, and he played pretty well at times for Virginia, so it's not like you know, the kid wasn't playing and just sitting on the bench. He played, you know, he played quite a bit there. So really good player, and he actually, you know, he played fairly well. But both teams really struggled, as we said. Not only statistically, they couldn't score points. I think Richmond finally punched it in later in the third quarter for their only touchdown. And really the only difference was an extra point miss that we had by Villanova when they scored their touchdown earlier in the third quarter. But even with that loss, Nova remains in the top 10. I think they're seventh this week.
Number seven.
Yep, and Richmond, I think, is right behind them at 8. So they're sitting really well for the playoffs. And, hey, you know, you're going to have games where you don't play quite as well, you don't execute quite as well on the road. And, you know, that was a tough matchup, and they didn't obviously play as well as they have been playing. But they're still in the thick of it. If they execute against some teams that are right around 500 the next 3 weeks, they make the playoffs, and that's, you know, that's all you can ask for. You want to get in there with those 16 teams and have a chance, and Villanova's a good team. You know, just because they didn't execute quite as well this week, I think being high on Nova still is reasonable for sure.
Well, you know, every week I say I throw out that big number that's always been between 480 and 520 total yards for the Wildcats, and this week it was 253.
Yeah, they didn't play well.
Yep. Keith, any thoughts on that game?
Hey, man, although I'm always going to worry about is getting into that 16, you know. I mean, like Terry said about, you know, three more games up against 500 teams. That's all they got to worry about is getting in there. Because all of the Division I AA, I mean, they got 10 games or 11 games. They're all just trying to get as high a rank as they can, a couple home games in the playoffs, in my opinion. So they may have lost a home playoff game by losing this game, but they're still going to make the playoffs. They're still going to make a run, in my opinion.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm with you. And speaking of the FCS rankings, and Villanova is seventh, as Terry said, but I got to throw a shout out in here to my son's Eastern Kentucky Colonels team, who's sitting at 8-1 and ranked number 15 in the nation after blowing the game that they should have won a week or so ago. But they will be playing number 4 Jacksonville State this week for the conference championship. So the winner of that will win that conference. And the Eastern Kentucky loss is a conference loss, and Jacksonville State is undefeated. So Eastern Kentucky needs to win, and if so, they will be one of those 16 teams, I believe. If not, they're probably headed to the house.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
go
yeah,
Are you gonna? Is that gonna be on TV somewhere? Do you think? You think we'll be able to find that? I'll have to look that up.
You can always go on their website. I watch all the games. It's on their website, and a lot of times they're on ESPN3. But you can always check them out. All right,
cool.
Two games I wanted to talk about real quick with you guys. Keith, did you get a chance to see any of the Ole Miss Auburn game and how that ended up down there on the half yard line with that guy breaking his ankle? Man, what a way to end the game!
Horrible way that I've ever seen a team lose a game. Like the worst way I've ever seen it.
Yep.
Just unbelievable. Could not believe it.
Yep. Ole Miss. You kept thinking they were going to go away. That Auburn had them where they wanted them, and they were going to go away. And Terry, they just wouldn't give it up.
No, absolutely not. That was an exciting game. You know, Auburn obviously came away with a very close win, a last second hold there at the goal line, as you pointed out. Laquon Treadwell, who's one of the best players in college football, it's very sad to see him get hurt in that manner. But he was literally inches away from punching that in, and Ole Miss, you know, likely winning the game and keeping themselves in the Final Four. But, you know, Auburn took over, secured the win. You know, both offenses played extremely well. It was pretty clean for the most part. A lot of weapons on that field, a lot of athletes. I think Ole Miss racked up pretty close to 500 yards of offense with Bo Wallace playing a pretty good game. I think he threw for over 300 yards. And then Auburn, obviously, very efficient on the ground as always, 248 yards rushing. Their quarterback, Marshall, is just a tremendous athlete, just continues to make plays. He's really progressed as a passer as well. And now you look at it, Auburn and Alabama, if Alabama beats Mississippi State, that Iron Bowl is going to be quite the game again. That could be a play-in game. Obviously, they have to play the SEC championship, but, I mean, my goodness, that last week of the season is going to be tremendous. And, you know, this game was kind of a segue into that. But tough for Ole Miss because they easily could have won that game. They played well enough, too. But, you know, Auburn is just, schematically, I said this a couple weeks ago, schematically they go into a lot of these games with such an advantage. And, you know, as long as they execute, it's really difficult to slow them down. And they were pretty effective in this one.
Yeah, you're right. Well, the other game I wanted to talk about real quick was the TCU-West Virginia game. And, you know, they came down to a field goal at the gun for TCU to win that, stay up high in the rankings. And West Virginia, you know, they have a pretty darn good team, but they got the turnover bug, too. They had five of them, three fumbles and two interceptions and lose at the gun. Did you get a chance to watch that? I didn't really get to see a whole lot of that game.
I did not watch very much of that game. I did watch a lot of that Ole Miss game, though. Yeah, West Virginia is really surprising people. It's a tough place to play. TCU, they're really, take away that one bad quarter against Baylor, and are we talking about them in top two? You know,
definitely.
It's unbelievable. I mean, and it's good. Patterson's a hell of a coach down there. He's just, wow, he's Patterson, I forget him. Patterson, right?
Yeah, Patterson,
he's,
yep.
Yeah, he's
yep.
He's the builder. It's not, and it's not like, you know, Johnny come lately, last year or two. I mean, they've been doing this 5-10 years now, just slowly, slowly getting it done. I mean, playing well and just beating people.
Yeah. I'm with you. TCU, Terry, they're going to be in the hunt here as we move forward.
No question, no question. They have a couple tough games left, but it really comes down to TCU. In my mind, TCU and Kansas State, and you know, whoever wins that game is going to likely put themselves in a position to be in the playoff. And you know what's really interesting? You kind of covered it all, Bill, as it pertains to the games. I mean, both teams really struggled throwing the ball less than 160 yards passing, I think, for both teams. They both ran the ball fairly well. As you mentioned, the five turnovers really did West Virginia in. But West Virginia is a pretty good team. But TCU, I mean, it's funny to think about them because defensively it's really been their calling card for a lot of these years. But offensively they're pretty darn dynamic, and defensively they've kind of struggled at some times, you know, throughout this year. But as Keith mentioned, the game where they in the fourth quarter where they gave up all those points to Baylor. But TCU is a really good football team, and when you look at their body of work at the end of the day, if they can make it through unscathed here, I think you'd be hard pressed to not include them in the Final Four. And think about it from this standpoint. Alabama, who a lot of us obviously believe on paper is one of the best teams in the country, their only quality win that they've had all year has been over West Virginia on a neutral site. And that neutral site game wasn't really a neutral site game because it was in the Georgia Dome, where obviously the majority of the fans were SEC fans and probably Alabama fans because they travel so well. that is their calling card so far on there, and they're going to have chances to win some games down the road. But I think TCU did two things in this game. Not only did they solidify themselves at 7-1 and having a chance to to move on here and have a chance at the playoff, but they also kind of knock Alabama down a peg because they beat West Virginia in West Virginia, and as Keith pointed out, one of the toughest places to play. And Alabama kind of struggled with them the first game of the year on a neutral site. So they kind of helped themselves in two different ways there this past weekend.
Yep. Well, they've put out some of the rankings already. So let's jump to that. We've got 7, 8, 9, and 10 already posted. 7 is Kansas State. 8 is Michigan State. 9 is Arizona State, and Notre Dame still sits at 10. And Keith, interestingly for you in the Big Ten, number 13 is Nebraska. Number 14 is Ohio State.
Yep. And this game, this coincided between Michigan State and Ohio State. That's the only chance the Big Ten has right now of getting in the Big Dance.
Well, Nebraska. Yeah, what about Nebraska, though? Nebraska, what are they? They're 7-1 or 8-1, right?
Well, yeah, I guess the winner of this game is going to play Nebraska probably in the Big Ten title, but somebody's only going to have one loss to even have a shot to get in that Big Ten or the
Absolutely.
Football.
Yeah, absolutely.
So didn't Nebraska get beat up by Michigan State, did they not?
Well, the game was they were grossly outplayed for about three quarters, but if you remember in the fourth quarter they made a run and they ended up making the game relatively close. I think it was – I don't have the game offhand, but it must have been 27-22 or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think
it was relatively close at the end of the game. Yeah,
but it was a blowout. That was a blowout.
It was for three quarters, for sure. Three and a half quarters probably.
Yep. All right, well, let's get our sponsor break in here, and we'll come back and we'll hit the rest of the top 10, and then we'll hit the Heisman. All right, so if you like shopping online, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out all 3,000 plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. All right, fellas, let's see where we go with the final six. But they're probably going to drag that out. So let's talk a little bit of Heisman. You guys started the season both with Marcus Mariota as your pick. I went with Bryce Petty. Are these guys still in the hunt? Keith, it seems the whole Heisman talk has been awful quiet all season long.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's been really quiet. They're really pumping this whole Final Four thing up for sure. I think that they're thinking the Heisman will take care of itself eventually. We shall see. But, I mean, I'm not standing down from Mariota, the Mariota call. I mean, I watched him play a little bit the other night, late at night. I watched the highlights of him. He just got a couple different speeds, man. He's a heck of a player. He's really, really good. Really good. And sort of fun to watch, too. Got to give it to him. I mean, has really anybody else? I mean, Nebraska, we're going to make a bullet. Maybe he has jumped into it, but is he going to be 100% now? He got dinged up a little bit last week. Is he a Heisman? And, I mean, who really has jumped out at you? I don't know, other than, who we had talked about.
Yeah.
Mariota.
Go ahead, Bill. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say right now, Mariota's got 26 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and 2,541 yards. I don't know that the yards is that all that important, but 10.25 yards per attempt, that's pretty good in itself. But, I just don't know. He's everything's been so quiet.
Yeah, it definitely
it really has.
Yeah, it definitely has been quiet. I'm with Keith. I took Marcus at the beginning of the season. As you pointed out, 2,500-plus yards, 68.1% completion percentage, 26 touchdowns, two picks. He also has 410 yards and seven touchdowns. He kind of got the proverbial monkey off his back by beating Stanford this past week in an impressive fashion. He had to utilize his legs a little bit more this game, which he hasn't really done as much this year. But he rushed for 85 yards and two touchdowns. He amassed about, I think it was 330 yards of total offense against the Cardinal and three touchdowns. So that was a big game for him. I think it was a Heisman, you know, kind of moment for him. If Oregon continues to win, I think he's going to be one of those guys for sure that's in New York. And other than Dak Prescott and, you know, some of the guys we've mentioned in the past, and Gurley, obviously, because of the suspension, you know, that he's probably done. But I think you got to look at Marcus. If Oregon takes care of business, which they should, and they win the Pac-12 and they go into this playoff, I think he'll win the Heisman. And he's a stand up young man. He's a really good individual. I've never heard one bad thing about him from a coach, from a player, from anybody that follows that team there in Oregon. You know, I think he would represent the Heisman in a really the proper fashion, and just a really cool story, cool kid, and a heck of a football player. And a lot of the scouts are really kind of, you know, getting on board with this kid in terms of him being, you know, the number one guy there for NFL team. So I'm going to stick with Marcus as well. Keith is much smarter than I am. I'm just going to follow his lead.
Hey, I don't know, man.
Well, my man Bryce Petty, he's sitting there at 2,034 yards, 20 touchdowns, three interceptions. He threw two of those interceptions in that shootout with TCU, but he also threw six touchdowns in that game. I guess where he laid his egg is in the loss to West Virginia. He was 16 for 36, 223 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Probably not good enough to win the Heisman Trophy, and he missed the game early in the season.
Yeah, I think for Bryce, it's probably a factor of you know, when you're at TCU, I mean, unless you're Robert Griffin III and ESPN pretty much hands you the Heisman, you know, just the marketing vehicle that you need to kind of put yourself in and amongst some of these, you know, high-profile teams, it's difficult. Bryce Petty, his numbers at the end of the season are going to be up there with Mariota or anybody else. He's definitely a worthy individual, and it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up in New York. So that was a great selection, and he still could do it. If Baylor ends up, you know, some way finding themselves in the midst of a playoff run, they're still in it. They have one loss, so they have a tough game this week, but we'll see what happens. But, yeah, his numbers are going to be as good as anybody's at the end of the year.
Yeah, well, his other misstep was at Texas in the 28-7 win, where he was 7 for 22 for 111 yards. That's not
that wasn't a good effort. Yeah, that wasn't a good effort.
No. So, well, we'll see. You know, my other guy the only one I could think of was Abdullah. But hey,
yeah.
Keith, I wanted to throw out to you. They're getting ready to name these last six teams, but you know what, Keith? I picked my woodshed game. I just took the wrong team because Florida just put a beat down on Georgia, my friend.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
They threw the ball six times the whole game, and Florida or Georgia knew they were going to run the ball and couldn't do one thing about it.
All right,
okay,
number one
is Mississippi State, number two, Florida State, number three, Auburn, no surprise there.
And then Oregon.
I would say Oregon has to be four.
Yeah.
And the SEC has to be five, and TCU has to be six, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely are dragging. They're dragging this out, Bill.
Yeah, they're trying to make a 30-minute show out of naming six teams, I guess.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Well, there's some interesting things that are going to happen here with the SEC West, obviously, but I still find it hard to believe that they're going to get two SEC teams in the playoff. And I think it's going to be really interesting if Alabama beats Mississippi State, and then, you know, depending on what happens with Ole Miss and Mississippi State at the end of the year, you know, and then Auburn and Alabama play, and, you know, you could see a very interesting situation with a two-loss SEC team, you know, having to play a Georgia team, or even a one-loss SEC West team having to play a Georgia team. If Georgia somehow wins that game, the SEC could be left out altogether.
Well, that's what I've been saying all along. I said before the season started, two losses for everybody. That's my goal.
Yeah, me too. I was with you, brother. There you go, Oregon at number four.
Yep. Oregon 4, Alabama 5, TCU 6, just as we expected.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let's jump ahead a little bit and let's talk about the games we have to pick, or we picked this last week, and what we got to pick the next week. We, Keith, you and I didn't do so well because we had matching picks, and Terry didn't do great, but he did good enough to win a couple of those games to pull into a tie now for first place overall. We
coming after you, Mr. Furman.
Yeah, I know you are, and you're on me. We all took Penn State, we all took East Carolina, and we all took Villanova, so we were all 0-3 right out of the chute there. We all took Auburn, so we were good. We all took TCU, so we wanted the gun there. But Keith, you and I took, who'd we take, UCLA, and Terry took Arizona. No, it was the other way around.
Opposite,
Terry took UCLA, and he got the win. Utah and Arizona State, we lost that one. Arizona State won that game. And Stanford, Oregon, good thing we didn't bite on that one because Oregon really took care of business. So 3-5 for me, 3-5 for Keith, 5-3 for Terry to make us 44-21, Terry, you and I, and Keith at 38-27. But we have a handful of games to pick this week, so let's go ahead and get that. We got all kinds of top 20 matchups, so let's go ahead and get that going. Who is up this week?
I think
Terry.
It's me.
Terry's up. Terry's
up.
Okay, awesome.
Right.
So Penn State, Indiana. So obviously I spoke a little bit about this earlier. Indiana, who I thought would be a pretty good football team this year, with injuries it's really kind of affected them, and especially at the quarterback position. So Penn State comes off of four tough losses in a row, but I have a feeling Penn State will bounce back in this game, and it's kind of a revenge game from that 20-point loss last year at Indiana. So I'm going to go ahead and take Penn State to rebound and play well enough to get a victory at Indiana this week.
All right, I am going to agree with you, and I'm thinking Penn State's going to be a whole lot better this week. I sure hope so. I'm going with the Nittany Lions.
Indiana cannot throw the ball. All they can do is run the ball. Penn State's very good at stopping the run, so I got Penn State by 10 plus.
10 plus? Whoa, I was thinking you were going to say 6-4.
Yeah, right? Don't say that. I'm like, God, I have nightmares.
All right, how about Memphis at Temple?
Yeah, Memphis at Temple, we mentioned this one as well earlier. Temple obviously coming off a big win, and as Keith pointed out, they better be on their P's and Q's, as they say, for this game against Memphis. Memphis actually comes into this game as a 7.5-point favorite. And looking at Memphis and their ability to kind of spread the ball around and do some different things, I think there will be a little bit of a letdown for Temple, so I'm going to go with Memphis going in there and winning the game this week.
I am going Owls.
Is that it? Just going to go Owls?
Yep, that's it.
I thought you were getting pinched and you were saying Owls. I'm worried about Temple this week against Memphis with the whole, looking past Memphis, coming off a big win going into Penn State. So I'm going to take Memphis also. Plus, it worked for me last week picking against Temple, so.
Well, you know what? We're going to find some separation then.
Yeah.
Here we go. Towson.
Well, we won't dwell on this Towson-Villanova game too much. I'll take Villanova.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
All right. Here we go to the big boys. Number 5, Oregon at number 17, Utah.
Yeah, this is a really good game. Utah is a really well-coached team. Oregon, obviously, is very explosive. I like Marcus Mariota in Oregon. I think they're playing at a different level right now, a different gear. Utah is a good team, don't get me wrong. They, like I said, they're well-coached, and they have a really good run game with Booker. At the quarterback position, they have two guys that can effectively get the job done. But I think Oregon wins this game. I think they'll win this game by 7-10 points, but they'll win comfortably enough. They'll kind of cruise, I think, very late in the game. So Oregon goes into Utah and gets a win.
Beth, Keith, you pointed out last week that some of the teams, the powerhouses that Utah has beaten, but then they couldn't get the job done this week at Arizona State. So I'm going to go back to Oregon. I think Oregon's mighty tough.
I got to make some ground up on you. I'm going to go with my Utah Utes.
The Utes. There you go.
I got to make a change.
That's right. Well, here's your chance to make a change. Number 6, Alabama at number 19, LSU.
Yeah, this is always a good game. This is all, you know, this is one of the rivalry games for Alabama and for LSU, at least in the last 10 years or so. You know, with Les Miles and Nick Saban, you know, obviously a good coaching matchup. Alabama, the one thing that concerns me is their ability to throw the ball on, you know, longer down and distances. I mean, you could obviously say that about most teams, but, you know, I'm not completely sold on Sims as a quarterback. He's played well at times, but I think LSU, that young defense, has been getting better. They're running the football better. They have so many freshmen playing all over the field for this team. Offensively, at wide receiver, they have two big-time freshman wide receivers. And one of them, Malachi Dupree, is going to be a big-time player. And then, obviously, Leonard Fournette at running back for LSU is going to be a big-time player for them. They're starting to come together, but the quarterback position is still kind of a mess for LSU. You know, I wanted to go LSU. I really did for the sake of chaos and the SEC being left out. But, you know, I really thought about it, and Alabama's the better team. And, you know, I think they're the even with both quarterbacks kind of, you know, struggling a little bit, I think Alabama has the better quarterback in this game. So I'm going to take Alabama to go into LSU and get a victory.
Well, I want to take LSU really a lot too. But I think about early in the year and some of the beatdowns they got put on them, and this team that played last week, that showed up last week, I'm not sure, or the other week, I'm not sure that's the real team. I'm going Alabama.
I'm going to draw the screen. I'm going to take the LSU Tigers, even though they're playing my Tide.
doing anything you can to gain ground, aren't you, buddy?
Yep, but I got to do something, right? I got to change it up.
I hear you. I'll tell you what, here's a game I really like. Number 9, Kansas State at number 7, TCU.
Yeah, that's a really good game, and that's going to be a hard fought. You know, they're gonna fight in the trenches in this one for sure. TCU, I like Boykin. I like what they're doing. They're at home. Patterson, I think defensively is going to come up with something that's going to slow down Kansas State and their ability to kind of run the football and kind of nuance you there with their offense. I'm going to go TCU at home to win a big game and to put themselves in a position. Hey, if Alabama gets upset, if Oregon falters at Utah, TCU, if they win, they're in the Final Four. Or at least, you know, they put themselves in a position to be in the Final Four.
Right. I'm going to go the other way on this, and I'm not sure why I would possibly want to go against TCU since they score like a pinball machine. But I'm going to go Bill Snyder. I'm going to go defense and Bill Snyder with the win. Kansas State.
I want to go on the purple out for sure. Guaranteed. There'll be a lot of purple at the game.
That's good.
Big Bill Snyder fan, so I'm going to go with K-State in this one. I mean, that's sort of an upset, I think.
Well, it's number 9 and number 7. I'm not sure it's not a dead even game. We'll see. All right, Big Ten, here we go. Number 16, Buckeyes at number 8, Sparty.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, I probably would have thought that Ohio State would have a really good shot at this game. But when you look at what Penn State was able to do, especially against Ohio State in the past game, Barnett still struggles throwing the football a little bit. And I think in this game, they're going to be up against it. Michigan State, I think, is a better football team. They're definitely more well-rounded, if you will, offensively. They can run the football. They can, you know, pitch the ball around with Cook. I think they're just going to have a little bit more leeway there, especially if the game is tight. So although I'm a big fan of, you know, Ohio State on paper in terms of talent, I think the quarterback position is going to be the difference. And I know Barnett can run the ball and he's going to, you know, do some things there, but Michigan State is so sound on defense. I think they play well, and I think that this is a statement game for Sparty, and I'm going to take Michigan State.
I am taking Michigan State as well. I guess I think they're just the better team all around, but I guess the only thing that worries me just a little bit is Urban Meyer, as much as I don't really care for him, he can get his teams ready to play. I just don't think they have as much talent, and especially to go on the road at Michigan State and win that. I'm going with the Spartans.
I'm going to be around a bunch of Ohio State people, so I got to go and talk to them. I can't believe I'm doing it.
yeah, you're going to the party. I'm not going to lie to you, Keith. I already had you written down on my sheet as Michigan State.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I got to change it up for the fourth time.
I hear you. You'll be rooting for Ohio State with your friends, and you'll have a Michigan State shirt on, probably. I'm not believing this one.
My underwear will be green. We'll be all right.
There you go. All right. How about number 10 Notre Dame at number 14 Arizona State?
Yeah, really good game. They had a pretty competitive game last year as well at a neutral site. So Notre Dame actually has to go on the road and play. They're playing a road game this week. Are you serious?
A real true road game.
Arizona State is really, really difficult to play at home. Arizona State has got the talent most certainly to match up with Notre Dame. I think in the Pac-12 alone, when you're talking about Todd Graham, this guy is a heck of a football coach, a great defensive football coach. He calls the plays himself. I think they'll come up with a scheme to slow down Notre Dame. I think Arizona State will win this game. I think it's going to be a really, really fun game to watch. I can't wait to watch this game. USC's off this week, so I'll have time to do that. So I'm going to take Arizona State at home against Notre Dame.
Well, I for some reason have been riding the Fighting Irish coattails, and I'm not going to change now. I'm going to ride them out and see what happens. I'm going Fighting Irish.
Gonna go Fighting Irish, so I can't make any room on you. The Fighting Irish showed me a lot a couple weeks ago against Florida State. Did not play well against Navy, or Navy played really good this week. Maybe they don't match up well, but Arizona State's one of those teams that's really weird. I've watched them a couple times this year late at night, but I'm going to go with Fighting Irish this week on this one.
There you go. All right, last one. Number 13, Baylor at number 18, Oklahoma. This is another interesting game for some middle-level teams.
Yeah, no question. Obviously, Bryce Petty's your guy. And we know how you feel about Oklahoma. You saw them in person, and, you know, you haven't been too high in their quarterback, and he definitely has struggled at certain points. But I'm going to go Oklahoma at home to win this game. I think they're going to play well. I think they're going to execute. Baylor, as we've seen, they have actually struggled in a number of games against defenses that are pretty athletic and physical at the same time. Oklahoma has a pretty physical defense. They have some athletes, you know, on that side of the ball. So I think Oklahoma, I think they do enough on offense. And I think they pull out a victory here, and they end the run for Baylor as it pertains to their playoff chances.
Well, I am going to have to agree with you. That's hard for me to do, but Oklahoma runs the football. You know, I always come back to that team that runs the football, and nobody out there plays defense, so you can't count that for anything. But I'm going to go with the Sooners at home. I believe they had 300-yard rushers last week, did they not?
That I don't know.
I think they did.
Yeah. Well, Oklahoma is one of those big, bad teams that Baylor's got to get through eventually, so I'm going to take Baylor this week.
There you go. Well, Keith, we're going to find out. You either get back in the hunt or you're all done.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the top of our hour already, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, www.south-beach-shopping.com, that's southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Goon, Keith Conlon, for their great insight. We would like to remind our listeners that we will be back next Tuesday night, November 11th at 7 p.m. to talk about last weekend's games, as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. Hope we enjoyed the show. And, Keith, I have something for you here that I was trying to play at the beginning, but we're going to play it now to close out the show. Hope you enjoy it.
The hyperbole is done. Now we can finally play the game.
Look at that. One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman. Intercepted by Teague. George Teague to the end zone. Touchdown. We're going to play football. Yippee. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. Ball goes into the end zone, and it is incomplete. Oh, the phone, everybody. There's a penalty flag thrown, and I think it's against Miami.
The royalty of college football is in assembly at the Rose Bowl 2006.
Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week.